and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff, and today we have a very special guest. The man runs an awesome gin distillery, of all things. It's Luke from Grandad Jack's. How you doing, Luke?
Good, mate. Always good. Making booze. Making
booze. And drinking it as well, which is the best part. Now, obviously, for those folks overseas and around Australia that might be listening, can you just give us a bit of an overview of Grandad Jack's, what it's all about, and all that sort of stuff?
Yep. So we're a very kind of localized craft distillery here on the Gold Coast, just off Christine Ave in Miami, very close to the beach, basically the closest distillery to the beach in Australia. We make an abundance of different stuff. We have limited releases every month, everything from kind of whiskeys, gins, vodkas, liqueurs, all that sort of stuff, but maybe kind of mainly our three gins, coffee liqueur, and our whiskies.
Very cool. And how did Grandad Jack's all come about? Where was the notion to start?
So late 2017, really close to Christmas, we're kind of sitting back having a drink, and me and my father, and I just finished up my apprenticeship as a mechanic, and he just kind of sold one of his businesses, and he was, you know, almost in this semi-retired state, as I like to give him shit about. But we're kind of sitting having a drink, and it was always a thing after my great-grandfather died, we'd want to do something in his honor. We looked at everything from barbershops to kind of, you know, museums in his hometown, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And having a drink and just thinking about how much he loved whiskey, we thought a distillery is a great way to do that. So I had a look. We looked at other distilleries that were in the country. I noticed there was a lot in Tassie. Mm-hmm. So I actually flew down to Tasmania, had a look around a few. I did this little kind of course a lot around the excise tax and mainly the back end of running a distillery. It's quite different to running just a general you know, business that doesn't have excise or these other controlled elements around it.
Well, as in like I mean, this is a stupid thing, but like the wearing hairnets, you know, making sure that everything's workplace health and all of those sort of stuff that we don't know as, you know, pub goers.
Kind of. It's kind of like alcohol as itself. Like,
so you don't blow up the place.
So we don't blow up the place. And also so we pay enough tax. You know, the tax man takes a good clip off basically everything that we sell. The excise tax on alcohol in Australia is $86.90. So it's a huge percentage per litre, you know, of all the spirit that we make. So it was a lot about just how to control that, how to make sure when you eventually get audited, how much, you know, all the correct paperwork you need to have. So it was a lot around that. And then basically we flew to the States for my 21st birthday. Met a really nice guy over there named Blake from a really good distillery in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And he actually decided, we convinced him to fly back and teach me in a couple of weeks how to distill and how to kind of get the distillery started in a really short amount of time. So we went from having the general idea to then being open in about 8 months.
Wow. So
fastest distillery to open in the country from, you know, that includes actually having a still and everything like that.
Yep.
And definitely from conception to actually reality, it was a very quick turnaround.
And why? Because you started with gin, didn't you? So why... Why was gin your granddad's favourite drink? Is that why we went with gin, or
just not just that? Gin, like, I really enjoyed drinking gin and making gin myself, and also gin was kind of it was something that didn't have to age for 2 years. So whiskey, rum, that sort of stuff has to age in a barrel for 2 years to be called those things. We kind of break the status quo on that a little bit here and there, but yeah, generally whiskey has to be aged for a certain amount of time. So to kind of, again, turn that around pretty quickly, open in 8 months, we needed a strong kind of base set or skew of alcohol, and gin was just a really popular thing that we enjoyed drinking, and that was kind of going up with the times as well.
And very, because I know absolutely nothing about gin.
Yep.
So going back, so I mean, I know whiskey, I think, is like a wheat-based alcohol and all that sort of. So what's the general way of brewing gin? Like, how do you go about doing it?
So there's a few different ways. Like, the really interesting thing about gin and vodka, actually, is that vodka and gin don't have to be made on a specific base. So whiskey has to be made on grain. So, you know, corn, rye, barley, wheat, that sort of thing. But gin and vodka don't have to be made on that. Anything that you can get starches or sugars out of, you can then turn into alcohol.
Hence potato vodka.
Exactly, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yep. So it kind of creates a large array of different things you can create gin out of. But the starting process for our gin anyway is actually down in South Australia. So every year when they're doing the vintage, they're collecting up all those grapes, they're squishing them out for their juices, and they're left with grape mark, which is kind of the leftover seed stem skins of grapes. Mm-hmm. And still have some sugar in them, so they can ferment those to about 4 or 5% alcohol, and then distill them to a nice neutral alcoholic base. And it is neutral in flavor, but it does have this kind of oily texture in my mind to it, and it was a really nice base for us to infuse with our different botanicals. So you start off basically having a vodka, and then you need to infuse it with at least one thing to be called a gin, and that's juniper. If it doesn't have juniper, but it has every other ingredient, then it's just a flavoured vodka.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Now, I've been to Grandad Jack's many, many times. It's a really cool setup that you've got going on down there, the actual design of the place, you know. Can you take us, obviously, folks who haven't seen it, can you take it? Was it... Am I right in saying it was an old surfboard warehouse?
Is that- yeah, so it was a surfboard manufacturer. So it was a company called Bravo Boards. They kind of manufactured surf skis and nippers boards out of that location. And it was the thing was kind of disjointed and a little bit crazy inside. There was, you know, 10, 15 years of surfboard resin all over the floor. We spent days with a tile remover, like, scraping off the ground. There was a lot of different bits and pieces, and... the first day we got the building, we actually had some drinks and brought all our friends around to show them this cool place that we got, and everyone thought we were insane. And then, you know, to turn that around, we basically did everything except for tear the four walls down around it. We added a new roof that adds this big kind of wow factor as soon as you step into the place.
Yeah.
And a big thing for us is my great-grandfather would have only used recycled materials whenever he was going to build his own property or, you know, build a shed out the back, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we really try to emphasize that when we were going about building our distillery. So we actually just collected up different materials from around the suburb, and, you know, we try to get as close to 4220 our kind of postcode as we possibly could to get a lot of those different materials. So everything from the struts used for the roof to the big iron beams, all that sort of stuff, we sourced as locally as possible.
Yeah, no, because it's a really cool vibe. When you walk in there, it's got this really cool, you know, because you've got the brick walls, yeah. And it's just this, I don't know how to describe it really. It's just a really cool sort of, I don't want to say trendy because that's kind of bullshit, but you know what I'm trying to say? Yeah. It's just got a really nice sort of atmosphere and vibe going on when you walk in the place.
Yeah, yeah. I think a part of that is, I think a lot of things have their own like aura almost. It sounds a little bit wanky to say it like that,
but
you know, these things that have lasted a long time and been in other properties and other substantial places, when you bring them in, it almost feels like you're at home as soon as you step into a place that has that bit of character. And I think that resonates through a lot of our locals that come in and just enjoy themselves and don't feel like they're in some, you know, super crazy high-end, you know, flash walls and all white place. So it's kind of just a wholesome, nice industrial style place.
Yeah, no, it's very cool. Now, you also said you've started on whiskey. So can you take us through the whiskey situation?
Yep. So for us, we're really determined to be this kind of more community-focused distillery. So we have a really small whiskey program. We're not putting down tens of thousands of litres. We're doing really small single barrel release style whiskey. So we've currently got down a rye whiskey, a single malt, a bourbon style, and a peated. And we'll kind of play around with those different styles. We actually just released our single malt and our bourbon style, single barrels as well. So it was pretty special. Our single malt sold out. We still got a couple of our bourbons left. But yeah, really interesting stuff. The thing with single barrels is that it's kind of just a different style of whiskey. You have to be really specific in tasting them during the aging process and pulling them out when you're really happy with how they're tasting. You can overage stuff that's in little barrels really quickly. So to get something at a really nice point can be a little bit difficult, and also not having any way to fix it. To fix other whiskeys, you know, you might have this one really strong oaky character in one barrel, and you think, okay, cool, I can add that to a barrel that's a little bit sweeter. But when releasing single barrels, you don't want any of that extra character that overwhelms the whiskey. So you're trying to figure out, all right, when's the perfect time to pull this out to still have all the character that we desire in it? And that makes kind of every barrel be really different from the other one.
And when it comes to gin and whiskey, obviously it's different ingredients, I understand that, but the actual brewing, well, brewing's beer, but you know what I'm trying to say, the distilling process between whiskey and bourbon and then gin would be quite different, I would imagine, or are they reasonably similar?
Kind of like the basics of all of it are similar, but the actual structure is quite different. So with whiskey, we're basically starting with a beer. So you're brewing the malt, you're not adding any hops or carbon dioxide, obviously, to actually make it into a beer, but you are using that malted barley, that rye, that corn to, you know, enhance those sugars, ferment into the alcohol later, and then distill those. The other difference is that we are starting with something, we're fermenting something from scratch anyway at our distillery for the whiskey. For the gin, we're getting in neutral alcohol, and that's for a lot of gins in the country, really. The biggest problem with that is that a lot of it kind of varies on the stills and the style of base that you're starting with. Since we're starting with a neutral base, it's a nice, clean, really safe base to use to then infuse with these really light floral flavors and the juniper and the citrus, that sort of thing.
Now, I've got a friend of mine who's a Scotch drinker, and whenever he sees anybody mix Coke with Scotch, he has heart failure because he's like, you're ruining a perfectly good Scotch. Yeah. What are you doing? You never mix Coke. Yeah. So how, because obviously you're a gin man mainly, How do we drink gin? What is the politically correct way to drink gin?
Oh, that's a hard one. Me, like, I'm not fussed on it. I just want people to enjoy the experience. I think for me, it's not only about the quality of the spirit, it's about the environment and the reason that you're, like, enjoying the product, right? Mm-hmm. When they come to our distillery, they're sitting back, they're enjoying the gin. It's a gin and tonic or a cocktail or something like that, or as the tasting board, like you've had before at our place. And it's about being amongst friends and being amongst that really nice environment. If people want to sit at home and they can just chuck in, you know, average tonic and average soda, it's not going to have the best representation, and that's just of every gin in the world.
Yeah.
I just want people to enjoy it however they like it. Some people are going to like it with orange juice, and some people are going to like it with tonic. For me, I think just mixing it as a classic gin and tonic and enjoying it, and also kind of finding the right tonic for your gin. Tonic and gin are kind of like cheese and wine. If you mix up, you kind of mess one with the other and they don't go together, you can kind of really have not the desired lasting effect.
So you're not a gin snob at all?
Nah, not at all.
Now, you have very kindly brought in some gin for my good self to try. Can you take us through what I'm about to drink?
Yeah, I've mixed you up our greenhouse gin and tonic. So that is kind of what we call our gateway gin. So it's for people that, you know, when we first open, people were a little bit apprehensive of gin. They think, oh, no, that's, you know, that's that old lady's gin. It's going to make everyone sad. And this is a nice, really citrus-forward gin with a grapefruit tonic. Just really refreshing. Something a little bit more subtle for people that aren't used to those big, bold, piney flavors that gin brings to you.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. So I've got a very good friend of mine who lives just down the street from where you guys are. And she's like, let's go to Grandad Jack's. It's a gin distillery that's just opened up. And I'm like, nah, that's not my drink, because I'm usually a rum guy or a cider guy or a beer guy. It's like, I'm not a gin sort of dude. And she's insisted we go. So we went.
Yeah.
And we had the tasting board, which you give us three different shots with some different mixes. And I got to say, I really, really enjoyed it. It wasn't at all what I thought. Now, maybe I've drunk crappy gin in the past and your stuff is a cut above. I don't know. But it's funny how, I wasn't into it. And then I tried it. And like what you've given me today, I really, really enjoy it. It's really, really nice.
Thanks very much, man. Yeah, like I said, it's about that experience, and that's really something that we try to offer. And, you know, coming in and we really set up exactly the gin and the tonic and the garnish that we recommend is just the way we really like people to experience our gins.
So what plans do you have for the future? What have you got moving forward?
For us, being that kind of localized feel, and when you come into the place, you feel at home, is really important to us. So we actually don't focus at all on distribution. You won't see us in Dan Murphy's First Choice, that sort of thing, as much as they want us to be in the store. We just really focused on having the experience in our tasting rooms. So we've got the one on the Gold Coast. We're definitely looking to have a second, third, fourth, fifth location. Mm-hmm. It's just about making the experience as good as it is here for the other locals in the other areas that we will end up opening in.
And what about the actual booze itself? You got some new gins coming out, or some new whiskies or bourbons in the pipeline?
We do a limited release every month. So at the end of this month will be Zach, who works behind the bar, our tasting room. He's got his chili and pineapple gin coming out. Okay. So it'll be this month. And then next month, I think we've got our Pavlova, which is a very beloved one for a lot of people that follow us. And that'll be kind of November, December, January. That'll be around for that. Then we've got what looks like a sticky date pudding moonshine for December. So, you know, every month we're creating something really unique and interesting and kind of fun for our locals that follow us.
Well, that actually brings a point that I'd not thought of before. So when you're brewing your gin, so you said like sticky date, obviously, so because it obviously is going to taste like sticky date pudding, like a ginny sticky date pudding. Yeah. How do you make that happen? Like what do you do to give it a certain particular flavor?
Yeah, so it kind of, the sticky date one actually was just, okay, what are the ingredients? And sticky date pudding's pretty simple, like in terms of its base ingredients. It's dates, it's brown sugar, it's vanilla, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what's the best way to infuse that? Is it maceration? So sitting all the ingredients in the alcohol and letting them soak and infuse that way? Or is it through vapor? So having the liquid be clear and like, you know, what works best for the flavor profiles and also the textural difference. What's going to, like, you know, if someone has their eyes closed, they're just tasting it, what brings them to that? And we kind of go down that route for a lot of our different spirits that we make.
And what do you love about it, man? Well, what is it that you, because you clearly, when you talk about it, it's a lot of passion in your voice. You really obviously enjoy this whole adventure that you're on. What is it that you really love about it, my friend?
I like learning new things just through like the actual practice of doing it. I've got no formal training in this. I didn't go to any, you know, university courses or big things like that. So it's really interesting for me to, one, you know, as a distillery, we've got a lot of awards, even in our 2 years that we've opened, so that's been really cool. And just creating something new every month and kind of pushing ourselves to do that has been really special as well.
That's very cool indeed. And you mix a good gin, I've got to say, my man. It's very nice indeed. So where can people find you if they want to know more about Grandad Jack's? Where can they find you?
So you can go to just grandadjacks.com, check us out on there. We've got the online store, or you can come down to our tasting room at 45 Lamana Lane in Miami on the Gold Coast. We'd love to see you, have a chat. You'll probably find me running around there and the rest of our family. So we're always happy to have you.
Absolutely. No, I must encourage folks, those who don't live on the Gold Coast, obviously hit up the website, because you obviously ship your product out as well.
Yeah, Australia-wide.
Absolutely. Fantastic. So, yeah, so those who don't live locally, you can still get your hands on some Grandad Jack's goodness. And, yeah, no, thank you so much for coming in today, Luke. I really do appreciate it. And bringing us a lovely gin, it's very nice indeed. That's been the podcast for today. I hope you all enjoyed learning a bit more about gin. It was very, very interesting. Very cool indeed. So, yeah, beernutsproductions.com for all your entertainment needs. And make sure you like, follow and subscribe to the podcast, and leave a nice comment as well, which is always nice. So that's the episode for today. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.